Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
You're welcome back to Alive and Kicking. Now, we're joined again today by Brother Richard Hendrick, a Capuchin Franciscan friar and author of Calming the Storms and Still Points. You may remember him being on the show to talk about those two brilliant books. This morning, we're delving into the heart of teen well-being and exploring how we can better support young people as they navigate the emotional highs and lows of growing up. This will be the focus of a conference that Brother Richard will be speaking at the Convention Centre in Dublin in September. And Brother Richard joins me now. You're very welcome.
It's lovely to have you back.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Good to be with you.
And this is a topic that's had major discussion recently, the Netflix series Adolescence had everybody talking, because being a teenager today is very different to the generations before, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. I look at my nephews and nieces who are just sort of beginning the journey into adolescence themselves, and you know, I look at them and I'm very, very grateful I grew up when I grew up. I think there's a huge amount of extra pressure on young people now. We can speak of it in terms of the internet pressures, but also I think just the sheer speed of life, the pressure of life, the pressure to react. And also, I think we've done a little bit of a disservice to adolescents in that we kind of expect them to be, you know, these very mature, very well put together young people. And on the outside, they can be. But internally, we're not giving them the space to sort of make that inner journey from childhood to adulthood that's so important for all of us.
Because this period of life is very important, isn't it? You start to transition from being a child into an adult. So that pull away, that independent seeking, that pushing of barriers, that's all very normal. But we want to make sure we don't give them too much.
Well, this is always the problem, isn't it? It's where does it kind of find its balance? And that's the tension of adolescence, the tension to individuate, to be your own individual, to kind of separate out, and then also to retain healthy attachment to family, to society, to group. I always think of, I was in France some years ago and sitting at a kind of a sidewalk cafe and watching a family who were obviously on a summer holiday walking by, and they'd a couple of kids of different ages, but first of all, the parents passed, and then directly with them were the younger children, you know, kind of babbling around, full of excitement. And then about 6 foot behind them came the teenager. And it was that whole thing of yes, I'm with them, but I don't really want you to know that I'm with them. But at the same time, I need them. And that's the tension in picture form, I suppose, that we have. So what we're trying to do, and this is through the work of the Sanctuary Centre in Dublin, is to encourage young people and those who care for them, parents, guardians, youth workers, etc., to be able to create a kind of a matrix, a safe matrix in which adolescents can make this journey, and in which those who are called to care for them are able to have the best kind of skill set to be able to work with that system.
And do you get many teenagers coming to the sanctuary?
Yeah, we do. Since the beginning. And in fact, that was how my relationship with the sanctuary began. I was head of youth ministry for our order at the time. And Sister Stan, who was the founder of the sanctuary there, really wanted to kind of open up what the sanctuary was doing for young people. So she set up a group to look at it. And we began to bring young people in for, you know, the basic classical things like retreats or days of reflection and all of that. But very quickly, we realized that what was needed, as well as those kind of experiences, were experiences that allowed the young person to develop their own interior reflective capacity. Because if we don't have that reflective capacity, then we live life in a reactive way. And adolescence is already pretty reactive in terms of what goes on in the brain, what goes on in the body. But if we don't have reflective space, then all we're having is a set of experiences, and we never actually distill it into wisdom, and we never begin to take a walk into kind of what a meaningful human life is. So I was working as a university chaplain at the time as well. And what I was finding was young people who were coming out of university, finishing, you know, graduating, etc., very successful, had good time in university. And right at the graduation time, they were saying, I don't even know if this is what I want. I have no idea about what, you know, life is going to be, very often with very little sense of even who they were. And so what we found was that while they were being, you know, moved very quickly through the education system, while they had all of these wonderful gifts to be able to kind of individuate, what they were really doing was individuating as their peers expected them to individuate. So you have this kind of peer initiation rather than what we would have traditionally had, which was an initiation into adulthood by those who are actually kind of elders in the society. Because we know for a fact now that peers can't initiate peers into a state beyond where they are because they haven't had the experience yet. So we need good, solid adult guides who will actually create reflective space, safe space for young people to reflect on their own lives and then begin to decide, actually, this is what a meaningful life is for me. If we don't have that, the likelihood is it will be trauma later in life that actually shakes us into looking at our own life instead. And what we'd like to do is to make sure that ever before the trauma happens, the young person and their carers have the skills necessary to negotiate this space.
Because you've probably had great insight into adolescence, perhaps more than parents would, because they would have spoken to you more openly and honestly in the space that you created.
It happens because, again, often the first question that people ask when they see someone like me coming to talk to them about parenting or adulthood is, what in God's name do you have to do with anything like that? You know, you've chosen a completely different way of life. And that's absolutely true. But that also bestows two advantages. The first is that you're at a distance. And when you're at a distance, you can stand back and look in a way that doesn't have maybe the same emotional involvement or the same reactive involvement. So we see an awful lot. And the second thing is exactly what you've said. Parents, young people, etc., come to talk to us. So I've worked at primary level, I've worked at secondary level, and I've worked at third level. I've seen the young person's journey over the last 30 years and also how it has evolved over the last 30 years, especially with the sort of technological revolution and having to negotiate all that the internet brings, both its joys and its sorrows along the way. And so, for example, at the moment, I'm on two boards of schools. And what the teachers are reporting there is that, you know, the perennial problems are still there, the same things that every young person has gone through from the beginning, but the context has changed. So, for example, if you take bullying, 90% of bullying now is online, 90%. And I remember talking to one young person who said to me, the difference between you and me is, because I was telling them about bullying experiences when we were growing up and how we dealt with them. And she kind of looked at me and listened for a while and then went, but the difference, brother, is when I go home, the bully's in my room with me. And that just blew my mind completely at that point. Because how do you work to create a solid personhood that is able to deal with that, that knows when to switch things off, when to switch things on, when to engage, when to seek help? And also would have a sense of themselves, a strong sense of themselves, that the bully, whoever they might be, isn't able to get at. So these are the skills that we're looking at in this conference. We're very, very lucky to have Gordon Neufeld coming to be with us as well, an extraordinary psychologist of adolescent and child behaviour, who wrote an absolute classic on this alongside Dr. Gabor Mate, a book called Hold On to Your Kids, which is literally about how the importance, the essential importance of having good parental, good care relationship, good attachment relationships with young people so as to be able to give them this space to grow and to become the individuals they're supposed to be. It's not about making them clones of the generations that went before, but it's about giving them, I suppose, the best toolkit possible to be able to build their own lives. And that's what we're hoping to do.
And something that really blew my mind as a parent, I have a son and a daughter, they're 14 and 11. We age them very quickly. Like I noticed with my son, the minute he could walk and talk, it's such a miracle that they're doing this. Mm. And you're so in awe of everything that they're doing. You age them and expect so much of them. Mm. I look back at toddler pictures where he was 3 years old and I expected him to know how to treat his sister, how to share, how to have manners, how to have all of these things.
Yeah, sure.
And that would obviously continue on. So when they're 14 now, towering over you, again, you assume that they have all of these skills and capabilities. But how do we keep an eye on their emotional maturity and help them with that?
So one of the things we really discovered over the work in the years with the sanctuary was emotional vocabulary was disappearing. And this goes alongside another thing that's very often disappearing, which is the limiting of the creative imagination. So because we're being fed everything constantly in full, you know, full sensory experience through the internet, etc., if you sat with young people years ago, and I'm talking 10 years ago even, and said to them, draw me a house, didn't matter who the young person was, you know, they sat down with a piece of paper, they drew a house. Now what we're finding is if we say to that young person, draw me a house, they say, well, show me a house and I'll draw it. Now that's a fundamental change in what a human brain can do. Because what it's asking for is you to feed me with what you want and I will give you back what you want. And that changes a creative adult, or a creative individual, into someone who is essentially becoming a kind of a worker ant at that point. You know, if you give me what you want, I will give you back what you want. So there's this reciprocity circle that's happening. So that was the first thing that really kind of made us sit up and go, okay, something has changed here fundamentally. The second thing was that when you said to young people, how are you? They'd say, Grant. Or they'd say, terrible. And the subtlety of shades between those, they couldn't actually specify. So we began to bring in a tool that's been really powerful for us, and it's called synesthetic inquiry. We don't give the young people the name of it, but they know what we're doing. So we'd sit with a young person and we'd say to them, how are you today? And we wouldn't get much response back. But if you say to a young person, what colour are you today? What smell are you today? What sound are you today? What taste are you today? It opens the imagination. And it's also a very safe way of describing what my feelings are. So we had one young person, for example, we said to them, how are you today? And she said, I'm snot green. Now, immediately we all knew where she was. Like everybody knew, oh, that's a horrible experience to be having. The second step in that inquiry then, though, to hand the power to change this to the young person is to say, well, what colour would you like to be today? And she said, well, I'd like to be sky blue. And then the third question, which is the most important question, and this is where you're really facilitating change for them. You don't wade in and go, well, in order to become sky blue, you need to do. What we say to them is, what do you think will get you from being snot green to sky blue? And she thought about it for a minute and she said, I need a drink of water and I need to go outside for a few minutes and then I'll be fine. So we sent them off to do that and she came back and she was fine. And later in the day, I said, how's it going? And she said, yeah, the colour's changing. Now, so what we're doing with that is handing them a tool. And it's a very ancient tool. It's a tool that goes back into a lot of the meditative traditions, the contemplative traditions of all religions, of all traditions, that says when I stand back from myself and begin to examine myself outside of the kind of reactive categories of being, when I begin to have a reflective stance that allows me to kind of look at myself, I can begin to recognize two things. There is an inner me that is independent from the emotional ups and downs that are going on. And most adolescents today have been taught that their emotions and their inner nature or identity are one and the same. Now, if you think your feelings are who you are, then it's a terrible experience. Because if I'm having a bad day, then that's what I am in that moment. And I can't see anything beyond that. So the adult in this moment is called to create, as Dr. Neufeld would say, a strong, clear, loving attachment that means the young person knows I am secure because no matter what I'm feeling, I'm loved. That's the first space. And the second space, which we work with in the sanctuary, is to say, okay, I might know that I'm loved and have the security of that, but I'm feeling awful today. But if I have the reflective tools to step back within myself and realize, yeah, I'm feeling awful today, but I also have power as to how I react to those emotions. And I also know that those emotions will come and will go. That's a huge, huge gift to a young person. It takes the pressure off completely. And it allows them then to begin to develop the creative imagination to say, how could I be? What would I like to be? What's necessary for me to become that? And that begins to activate change then.
And it's very difficult for that self-reflection in the age of distraction. I think Absolutely. Most young people feeling snot green pick up their phone, start to get a few dopamine hits from what they're watching and distract away from that feeling, but never really get to the bottom of why it was there or how they might have fixed it.
We have the distraction is one thing we go for, and we all go for this. It's not even young people. Look, it's absolutely all of us.
Yes, hands up. You're right.
We're all there. All of us, we do it. That's the first thing. The second thing, though, that we do, which is actually more common amongst adolescents, is we look for intensifiers of the emotional state that we're in. So when I sit with young people and I say to them, how many of you have got a playlist on your Spotify that's for when you're feeling sad? They all put their hand up straight away. And I say, what's the music? And the music is all sad music. So I say to them, well, what happens when you listen to that music? And they say, we get sadder. So I say, what are you looking for in that moment if you're trying to make yourself sadder? And they're saying, well, we don't want to feel sad. But if we go sadder, we'll actually feel more. It takes numbness away. Now, the problem with that is you're in a spiral then at that stage because there's nothing to take you out of that. Whereas if we're in ordinary life, ordinary reactive life to the situations around us, I might be feeling sad at the moment, but then I've got to interact with you or I've got to work or I've got to do things. And there will be things that lift me out of it. But if I'm moving into a tunnel and the tunnel is just reflecting or echoing back at me the emotional state I'm in, that's where we begin to get young people then who, you know, find it almost inescapable to get out of those states and are creating biofeedback loops in their own brain that's training them into particular states of emotion. So one of the things we do is we begin to create happy playlists and say to them, what would it be like if you were really sad and instead of playing your sad playlist, you played your playlist for getting ready to go out on a Friday evening? What would that be like? And they were like, oh, I couldn't feel sad anymore. Like, okay. So now you've got a tool that's with you in your phone, you know, part of the internet, part of all of the things that we're saying, you know, can be difficult to negotiate. But now we're saying, why not turn the hammer into something that's going to create something beautiful rather than something you're going to hit your own hand with?
I feel like we've scratched the surface, but you're really going to get into it at the conference, the Youth Conference 2025, Guiding Our Youth, Navigating Attachment and Transition into Adulthood with Dr. Gordon Newfield and yourself, Brother Richard, is on in the Convention Centre in Dublin. It's amazing. It's amazing that you're doing it. And it feels a little overwhelming, I think, right now. We're like, well, what can we do? We can't step, but we can. We can. There are steps and language we can make.
I'd say immediately to anybody out there that's going, oh my God, how do I deal with all this? The first is put the phone down yourself when you're listening to the young people. That's the first thing. Okay. All of the young people we talk to now say that what they just want is to be listened to. And what they mean by that is listened to by somebody who isn't distracted while they're listening to them. So that's the first thing. Doesn't matter who you are, put the phone down and listen to them. You don't have to react, you don't have to agree, you don't have to disagree, you just have to listen. And that creates a space then in which the young person can step into a reflective place. And the second thing is, and this is very much what Gordon will be talking about, is, you know, love them. Just love them. Let them know they are loved in and of themselves. The most essential message we can give to any young person is, it doesn't matter who you are, what you say, what you do, you are fundamentally loved. If we can give young people those two things, the experience of being loved, the experience of being listened to, everything else works itself out.
Well, can I book my kids in for 2 weeks like the Gael talked, please?
Definitely. We'd be delighted to have them.
Friday, 26th of September. For more information on that conference, see sanctuary.ie. Brother Richard Hendrick, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having us.
Right, coming up after the break, mentor and business owner Sian Horn on the stereotype of health and wellness.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk.